Fort Laramie, starring Raymond Burr as Captain Lee Quince. Specially transcribed tales of the dark and tragic ground of the wild frontier. The saga of fighting men who rode the rim of empire. And the dramatic story of Lee Quince, Captain of Cavalry.
Well, hello again. This is Buck Benny speaking. Welcome to another episode of Fort Laramie with Raymond Burr. Today's episode brings us back to writer Kathleen Height. Her scripts just have something that no one else's does on this series. And so I'm so glad that she will be taking the whole series over here very soon. These next three episodes are all written by her. This episode, I like the way she interweaves the war correspondent coming in to report on what's going on at Fort Laramie and with the troops and everything, which is a pretty common storyline for sure in lots of Westerns, especially Westerns on television. I would suppose at this point in 1956, it probably wasn't that common of a storyline, but it would be. But even with that, this story interweaves information for us about the cavalry and the guns that they use, in that at this point in time, and I've heard this many places, including, I guess the most famous place for this information is probably the movie Winchester 73 with Jimmy Stewart, which is one of the first kind of adult psychological Westerns out there. Anyway, the information that this has along with Winchester 73 is that the enlisted man had a gun that he would shoot that would take one bullet, and then he would have to reload it and put in another bullet and shoot it. Certainly was faster than, you know, the old muskets and things, but it was still a process and hard to get off multiple shots in a very quick amount of time. Even the officers were assigned these guns, but the officers had enough money that they could go and buy themselves a different rifle, a repeater type rifle, like the Henry or the Winchester. And what these would do is it would allow you, if you think kind of most of the guns you see on Westerns, the rifles are the repeating type rifles that you can cock, shoot, cock again, shoot, cock again, shoot, and maybe would hold, who knows, multiple bullets, 18 bullets, something like that, without having to reload. And the reloading process was a lot quicker too. You could just slide them in the side and it would reload quickly. So what they talk about in here is mostly the Henry rifle. And the Henry, you could take and fire, reload by just cocking the handle, kind of like, I guess you'd think of it as not exactly, but similar to the rifleman's rifle on the television series. Then, of course, the enlisted men didn't have enough money to buy one of those rifles. And so in a shootout situation, they were had more trouble, especially it points out that a lot of the Indians would buy these rifles for themselves. And so they would actually outgun the cavalry in certain ways. I think that's an interesting storyline. And a true storyline. The other thing is that it doesn't point out is that there were less expensive repeating rifles, but they were not designed very well. And so someone might buy those, but then they might backfire, get jammed, cause serious issues if you were using those inferior rifles that were repeaters. So, and a repeater just means that they could shoot one after another without having to constantly reload just by cocking one way or another. Anyway, it's just neat to see how she weaves so much information into her scripts and so many storylines. There's always like multiple things going on and it works on multiple levels, which makes for a more interesting storytelling. So I hope you're going to enjoy this episode and the next couple that are written by her. There'll be a couple more written by outside writers, and then she'll take over for the remainder of the run. So at this point, it's mostly going to be Kathleen Hite that you hear from here on out as the writer, which I invite wholeheartedly. So without further ado, I hope you enjoy this episode of Fort Laramie. I guess the other thing I would point out is if you like the sound quality of these Fort Laramies, and maybe you haven't been listening over on my Jack Benny OTR podcast. On Wednesdays, we put up Gunsmoke and Have Gun Will Travel, and with pretty inferior sound quality in the past, but we've just upgraded those. So if you want to check those out, they sound as good or better than these Fort Laramies. Both the Have Gun Will Travel and the Gunsmokes have gone through massive upgrades lately. So you might want to tune in and check those out. I'll also be starting to do the introductions of those along with Rob in a few weeks. Rob's got about three more, and then Rob and I start doing them together. We recorded a Zoom presentation that we together, and that was a lot of fun. And we're going to probably continue to do that. We may even invite you guys to participate in our Zoom meetings where we're talking about the episodes and things, which could be fun. But I'll fill you on that later. So enjoy the episode. We'll see you next time.
At the gallop!
Fort Laramie, starring Raymond Burr as Captain Lee Quince. Specially transcribed tales of the dark and tragic ground of the wild frontier, the saga of fighting men who rode the rim of empire, and the dramatic story of Lee Quince, Captain of Cavalry.
You see that, Monk? I blew the top of his head clean off.
Beginning where?
Right at the eyebrows. Sliced him just as clean.
You figure that killed him, then, huh?
Oh, sure, he's dead.
Well, I declare that makes a fair morning shooting, Harrison. Let me see now. You killed Crazy Horse, Black Leg, and American Horse just since I've been watching.
You ain't forgetting Roman Nose.
You shoot him, too?
Oh, yeah, the last one. He was Roman Nose.
Well, now, ain't that peculiar? I'd have swore he was killed at the Rickery a year or two back.
No, I just now killed him. Hey, you think maybe they'll give me a stripe for that, Monk?
Oh, I don't know, boy. Seeing he's been dead that long, they might not figure it's worth no stripe.
Yeah. You ain't practicing much, Monk.
Oh, well, didn't you know I was killed a while back whilst I took the time to reload my Springfield?
Now, get me another.
Who'd you get, boy?
I missed the target. I guess I've been lying on my belly too long.
Yeah.
Oh. Hey. It happens, don't it, Monk?
What happens?
Men get themselves killed on account of having to stop and reload after every single shot.
Sure it happens.
My daddy used a Springfield just like this one in the war between the states.
Your daddy used one in the Civil War, boy.
Now, don't you start that up again.
We both used them, Yankees and rebels alike. Now, if you're saying it's time we had a better firearm against the Indians, you're just right, Harrison. You are just right.
You tried them Spencers, Monk?
Sure. We had them in the war. They load right behind the bore. Their shape's all right. Shorter, you know. Make better carrying for a trooper, but they ain't the answer.
I'd sure admire to try one.
Captain Quince, him and them other officers, they got the answer, boy. Henry rifles.
Yeah, them repeaters.
You ever ask yourself any questions, boy, there'd be a good one for you.
How's that?
How come the only ones that's got them new Henry rifles is some of the officers and most of the Indians?
I don't ask myself questions like that, Monk.
Make mighty interesting answers, questions like that.
Monk, you better hold your tongue. We ain't exactly alone.
Boy, you ain't never alone in the Army.
Don't stop talking on my account, man. I'm very interested in what you're saying.
Must be, seeing you was writing most of it down.
Oh, just making a few notes. Go on about the rifles.
What's he talking about, you suppose?
You got some business here, mister?
I have papers from Major Daggett giving me permission to move freely about the post.
Well, now, ain't that nice of the Major, sending us a moving target to practice on?
You some kind of spy coming around here in mufti, sneaking around a rifle butts, writing down everything we say?
I'm a correspondent for the New York Star. That's a newspaper.
You want to buy a paper, Harrison?
Who'd I get to read it to me?
All right, man. Maybe you can point out Captain Quince to me, then.
You're facing that way, Harrison. You point him out.
He was up there at the head of the line. Now, I ain't saying he's there now.
I think I can find him. He would be the one carrying the Henry rifle, wouldn't he?
Harrison, I think I'm going to pass that suggestion on to the Major. I think we'd do a sight better shooting at a living target, especially if he carried a notebook with him.
Yes?
Captain Quince?
That's right.
You're sure you are Captain Quince?
Something on your mind, mister?
I'll just take your word for it. I don't think I can walk anymore. Oh. My name is Harkness, David Harkness. I'm a correspondent from the New York Star. That is a newspaper.
Yes, I know. Did you walk out from New York, Mr. Harkness?
It feels like it. I think I have just been initiated into the Army, Captain.
Initiated?
Mm-hmm. The Major told me I would find you on the firing range. I walked there. A sergeant said you might be at the cavalry stables. I walked there. From there, I walked to the saddlery on someone's advice, then to the corral, then to the post office. And finally here to old what is it?
Old Bedlam.
Old Bedlam. I think maybe your men wanted to be sure I had a long walk.
Mm-hmm. The men wanted to know who was listening in on private conversations, writing down what they said.
I told them who I was.
After you made your notes.
That's right. The Major gave me a free hand on the post. Guess I used it a little too freely. I didn't mean any harm, Captain.
Men will talk freer once they know you and trust you.
Well, then you don't have any objection to my talking with the men?
No, not if they don't.
Oh. Captain Quince, one thing I overheard bothers me. Can I ask you about it?
Go ahead.
At target practice on the firing range, those men are still using single-shot Springfields.
Them and a few Spencer carbines.
Now, the men say they're outmoded.
They are.
The men are not issued Henry rifles?
We don't have them to issue.
But some of the officers have them. Am I right?
Some of us. I have one.
You have one, but your men haven't.
Mr. Harkness, my men make $13 a month. They can't afford to buy Henry rifles.
You mean to say you bought yours, Captain?
Like the rest of the officers who have them, at the Sutler's store.
Well, shouldn't the Army equip itself with the best possible arms?
Of course it should, but guns cost money, Mr. Harkness. So far, we can't afford the kind of guns we need.
Well, now, In Washington, they talk of nothing but appropriations for the Army in the West.
Talk doesn't send us any guns.
Well, these Henry rifles, they are to be had. I mean, providing the Army gets the money to pay for them, they're not in short supply.
A lot of the Indians have them, Mr. Harkness.
I heard that, too. I couldn't believe it.
I've seen it.
How do the Indians get them? Who in the world would sell guns the Army needs to the Indians?
Oh, renegade whites, traitors, kind of men who get rich in other men's blood.
I am a long way from home, Captain Quince. It's another world. I've got an awful lot to learn.
You never stop learning out here, mister.
Well, Captain, I'm here for a month. Can I learn enough in that time to give me a fair picture?
Well, you got a good start. You admit you got a lot to learn. You sent for me, sir?
Sit down, Captain. Yeah. Read this.
Well?
I'm just assuming that the anonymous captain in Mr. Harkness' story is you.
I talked to him, if that's what you mean.
I'd say you did quite a good job of talking, Captain. The men have outmoded equipment. The officers buy their own repeating rifles. The Indians have little trouble coming by Henry rifles. Do you want that printed in a large New York newspaper?
Do you?
I emphatically do not.
It's the truth.
Of course it's the truth. That's not my point.
I'd like to know your point.
Ali, I don't want our tempers involved in this. I'm questioning your judgment, and I want some answers.
That's good. So do I. You sent this Harkness looking for me, right?
Yes, I sent him.
You knew he was a correspondent for a newspaper. You gave him the run of the post. That means he can ask questions and get answers, right?
Well, yes, that's right.
He asked me some questions. I answered him.
I see you did.
It's an Army secret that we're short of equipment?
I've sent the same information on to Washington for months now. You know that, Captain. I've requested, I've pleaded, I've begged.
And nothing's happened.
They're a long way from the problem, Lee. The need diminishes with the miles between. This kind of newspaper article can stir up public opinion. Just wonder if it's wise.
If plain facts stirs them into action, I don't see it's unwise.
The Army moves its own way. I know you don't always agree with it, Captain, but if this article causes trouble, it's my trouble, not yours.
Then I'd say you'd better make up your mind, Major.
How's that?
Harkness, if he's got your leave to be here and take a square look at things, ask questions, get answers, you're going to get articles like that one. If you don't want them, why, kick him off the post.
Did Mr. Harkness tell you how the people in the East feel about the Indians?
We talked about guns.
As I understand him, we're the villains, Captain, the Army. And the red men are all peace-loving hunters who never kill or plunder or raid.
Is that all, Major?
No, that's not all, Captain. The settlers along Fish Canyon have reported a rash of small raids. Take a patrol out tomorrow morning. Bring me a full report.
Right.
I want you to take Mr. Harkness along, Captain.
It's not my job to mind what he sees, who he talks to, what words he sets down.
I want him to see all he can see and write all he can write, so long as it's true.
You'll tell him that?
I'll tell him. Any questions, Captain?
No, sir.
Then move out.
Well, how are you riding, Mr. Harkness?
If I join the Army, Captain, I put in for the infantry.
The other day, when you were walking, you wanted a horse.
Yeah. I'm hard to please.
You're human.
How long will we be out, Captain?
Well, it depends on what we find and who we find.
The Major said we were going to talk to some settlers.
About Indian raids.
Then we might find Indians, too.
Yeah. Or they might find us.
I guess you never know, do you?
You never know.
Captain, will you let me know when we're in Indian country?
You're in it.
Oh? Oh. Well, the settlers, I should think they'd want to live near a Fort Laramie for protection.
Yeah, we'll be coming on to some settlers soon. Ask them.
That was a deserted cabin along the creek, Captain. No Indian signs around.
What about the calendar place, Mr. Syberts?
Straight ahead, sir. Fish Canyon.
Straight ahead? How far, Mr. Syberts?
I'd say about 2 miles, sir.
Fine.
Mr. Callender's the one I was telling you about.
I remember, Mr. Syberts. You know Mr. Harkness?
We met last night.
Lieutenant Syberts was a big help, Captain.
That's so?
I didn't do much, really.
What do you mean, Lieutenant? Those diaries of yours gave me a lot of valuable background.
Diaries, Mr. Syberts?
They're not much, sir. It just gives me something to do sometimes.
I'd like to read yours sometime, Captain.
I'd have to write it first.
You don't keep any written record of your experiences out here?
No.
Well, I think there'd be a lot you'd want to remember, Captain.
Well, there's more I want to forget. 2 miles, Mr. Syberts?
2 miles, sir.
Meet a settler, Mr. Harkness?
I sure do.
Well, climb down then.
All right. Oh.
Ooh.
It looks quiet enough here, Mr. Syberts, but keep an eye alert.
Yes, sir.
Sergeant!
Yo!
Sergeant, take Harrison and Monk, circle back by the barn, those sheds near the wash. Check the area for Indian signs, report back.
Yes, sir.
Harrison, yo! Come on, follow me.
This would be Mr. Callender's place.
That's right.
Can't blame him for choosing this spot. Beautiful country.
That's as far as you go.
No need for the rifle, Mr. Callender.
I'll be the judge of that. I have no use for the army. Said so the last time. Say it again. Now get off my land.
Guess you haven't been raided along here. Report said you had.
That's always your excuse, ain't it? Come snooping around a man's property, claiming to look for Indians.
Seen any Indians, Mr. Callender?
Seen nothing. Now you don't frighten me, riding up in numbers. I got my rights and you're trespassing.
You don't have any trouble with the Indians?
Don't have no trouble with anyone, save the army. That one out there, young one, sitting his horse, a proud.
Lieutenant Syberts?
Their name's no matter. Caught him here a week or so back, fired on him for snooping, sneaking up on a man's own land. Told him not to come back.
I know that.
That one more bar you wear don't make you any more welcome. You're still the army.
Heard enough, Mr. Harkness?
No, I haven't. The army is out here to protect people like you, Mr. Callender. Now, what have you got against that?
I tell you, if you're too dumb or too greenhorn to know, there was no trouble out here till the army came. Red men are all right. You know how to deal with them. You'd better stop him where he is.
That's far enough, Sergeant.
You all right, Captain?
You find anything, Sergeant?
No damage, Captain, but a lot of horses was here, back by the corral. They're fresh marks, sir.
Got a lot of neighbors, have you, Mr. Callender?
All I need.
We didn't come on any settlers on our way here, Captain.
You heard him say it, Mr. Harkness. Red men are all right. You know how to deal with them. Guess maybe Mr. Callender knows how.
You're getting off my property now.
Thanks for the help, settler. You better eat something, Mr. Harkness.
Oh, Captain, I can't. There's too much that just doesn't set well in my stomach.
Yeah, coffee, then. It goes down when nothing else will.
Thank you. Where are we camped? Still in Fish Canyon?
North end of it. We did a good job of covering the canyon today.
And tomorrow?
Well, we'll head back to Fort Laramie and report to Major Daggett.
Five families slaughtered. And that's your report, isn't it?
That's about it.
How do I do it, Captain? How do I show what I saw today to the people back east?
I don't know your job, Mr. Harkness.
If I can write it just as I found it, maybe it'd jar them out of their complacency. Persecuted redmen, peaceful hunters. Oh, they're nothing but savages. They're the butchers.
These Indians, yes.
What do you mean?
And I'll tell you, I saw a slaughter once, the remains of one. 80 men, women, and children huddled beneath a flag that was supposed to give them immunity.
But they were killed anyway.
Ridden down, slaughtered, hacked, shot.
Indians don't put much value on human life, do they?
This was white men's work, Mr. Harkness.
White men's?
White army men.
You saw this happen?
Yeah, some of us were sent out after it happened to move the dead to burial grounds. Yeah, a savage is a savage, Mr. Harkness. Color of his skin's no matter.
I'll try to remember that, Captain.
Once you see it, you don't forget.
Now, what about a man like Callender? Indians have been at his place, too.
Yeah, we think so.
But he wasn't killed. His cabin still stands.
Could be he trades with them. Horses, grain.
Henry Rifles.
Might be.
Well, if you thought he did...
I'd have to know he did, Mr. Harkness.
Yeah, you would, wouldn't you?
The day of riding ahead. You better get some sleep.
Indians, up on the bluff.
Mount, make for the rocks. Sergeant. Sergeant, pass the word.
Yes, sir.
Mount, make for the rocks.
Mr. Syberts. Mr. Syberts.
Here, Captain.
Harkness in your tent?
No, sir. You better mount, sir.
Harkness. Harkness. Mount and make for the rocks. Him, Mr. Syberts?
No, sir, but he's armed, Captain.
Yeah, he'd better be. Now, let's go. Dig in! Dig in and fire!
They're firing the camp, sir.
They can have the camp.
Any sign of Harkness, Captain?
I'm looking at Indians right now, Mr. Syberts. Hold your fire, men. They're out of range.
Hold your fire!
Well, let's see how we stood up, Mr. Syberts.
Right, Captain.
You all right, Harrison?
Captain, I'd like to wake up this way every morning.
That's the prettiest sight in the world.
Indians riding away from you. Ain't that right, Captain?
Yeah, just right, Monk. I'll look on ahead, Mr. Syberts. You check the other way.
Yes, sir.
Captain, over here!
What's the matter? You ain't never seen a little blood before, mister?
Captain, this man is hurt.
They get you, Gores?
A nick, that's all. A little nick in the shoulder. Like we had 1,000 times, Captain.
Yeah, let's have a look.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
He's lost a lot of blood.
He's going to make somebody a wonderful mother, Captain.
I think you'll live, Gores.
I don't know. This sure ought to get me a couple of days in the hospital, don't you think? A couple of days of sleeping, spoon-feeding, maybe.
You're going to live till you get to the hospital?
I can see I better save my real suffering for the medical officer.
Well, Captain? What do you think of it, Captain?
What's it supposed to be?
Oh, the account of the raid on our camp at Fish Canyon.
Yeah. Reads like the Battle of Bull Run with Indians.
Well, I colored it a little.
You counted 100 Indians, Mr. Harkness. I saw maybe 20.
Well, I did that on purpose, Captain. You see.
And Sergeant Gorse got a flesh wound in the shoulder. He didn't die a hero's death like the sergeant in your story here.
Don't you see, Captain, the people back east, the people in New York and Washington, they've got to be blasted out of their beliefs.
With lies about a pitched battle that never happened?
Well, you think they'll pay attention to the story as it really happened? You think that'll get you the guns and the equipment you need?
I don't know, Mr. Harkness. I don't know your business. When you came here, you said you wanted a fair picture of the West.
I still do.
You're getting it. We got settlers who get massacred. Well, like the five families you saw in Fish Canyon. We get settlers like Mr. Callender who don't. We got red men who slaughter innocent whites, and we got red men who sit down at treaty tables and try to make peace.
Well, all that... doesn't make exciting reading, Captain.
It makes life and death out here.
You're quite a realist, aren't you?
I live here, Mr. Harkness.
The army is always right?
Army's not always anything. Not always right. Not always wrong. You tore up the story, I didn't.
Well, I'm right back where I started, Captain.
Are you?
I've still got a lot to learn.
And it's still a good sign, if you want to.
Fort Laramie is produced and directed by Norman MacDonald and stars Raymond Burr as Lee Quince, Captain of Cavalry, with Vic Perrin as Sergeant Gorse. The script was specially written for Fort Laramie by Kathleen Height, with sound patterns by Bill James and Ray Kemper. Musical supervision by Amerigo Marino. Featured in the cast were Lawrence Dobkin, Harry Bartell, Jack Moyles, Sam Edwards, Parley Bear, and Lou Krugman.
Company, attention! Dismiss.
Next week, another transcribed story of the Northwest frontier and the troopers who fought under Lee Quince, Captain of Cavalry. Many people who should know better sometimes use their automobiles to take out whatever is bothering them on other people. Keep this in mind. Driving too fast or trying to beat traffic lights doesn't prove you're better than the other guy. You can prove your superiority by setting a new safety record. Not only that, but you'll be around to enjoy it. Gunsmoke, brought to you by Chesterfield. Chesterfield packs more pleasure because it's more perfectly packed thanks to Accuray. They satisfy the most. Around Dodge City and in the territory on West, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers, and that's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of gun smoke. Gunsmoke, starring William Conrad. The transcribed story of the violence that moved west with young America. And the story of a man who moved with it.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal. The first man they look for and the last they want to meet. It's a chancy job, and it makes a man watchful and a little lonely.
Marshal Dillon.
Hello, Bowers. How's the cattle business?
Yeah, I shipped 1,000 head out into Santa Fe this morning. Guess I can afford to buy you a drink.
Well, thanks, Bowers, but I hear Doc Adams has been looking all over for me. I better go find him.
He was in here a while ago talking to Kitty.
Huh?
Oh, here she comes. Maybe she knows where he went.
Matt?
Oh, Kitty.
Hello, Mr. Bowers.
Hello, Kitty.
Doc had to leave, Matt. They called him out to the Smith place on an emergency, but he asked me to give you a message.
Oh?
You know Ed Thorpe and his wife?
Well, sure, I know.
Yeah, they got a little piece of land right on the south edge of my ranch. They're not doing very good, though.
Well, they sure aren't, according to Doc. He was out there last night, and he'd planned to go back for him today.
To go back for him?
They have to be brought into town, Matt. They've got spotted fever, both of them.
Hey, they got a little baby out there, too.
Well, that's why Doc says somebody's got to fetch all three of them into Dodge where they can be taken care of.
Well, I'll find a wagon and go after them tomorrow. We couldn't get them back tonight, anyway.
You want some help, Marshal? I got a pack of cowboys who ain't earning their feed.
Well, thanks, Bars, but Chester and I can manage.
You might need some help.
Oh, what do you mean?
Ed Thorpe. Sick as he may be, he'll get a gun and fight before he lets you carry him off that place. I know him.
Ah, then he can stay there, but I'm going to bring his wife and child in.
All right, but you keep an eye on him. He can be a bad one.
Thorpe's place, Mr. Dillon?
Yeah, I know, Chester, but I want to meet these people. They must be new. Come on.
How do you know they're new? You ain't been out this way in over a year.
Well, all the more reason to meet them. Now, let's walk around back. I thought I saw somebody there.
Nothing but a sod hut and blow dirt. I must be living on nothing.
Well, it doesn't look like it, Chester.
Huh? Why, he's butchering a calf. Now, where'd he get that?
Well, he sure didn't raise it on those weeds his woman's trying to hoe. Hello.
What are you men doing here?
I'm Marshal Dillon from Dodge. This is Chester Proudfoot.
How you do? Something wrong, Marshal?
No. Except your hat's gonna get all bloody where you laid it on this calf.
Leave it be.
Here. You got sunstroke without a hat.
All right. So I was trying to cover up Emmett Bauer's brand. We're starving out here, Marshal. I had to kill that calf.
You ain't gonna arrest my husband, are you, Marshal?
No, ma'am. Not unless Emmett Bauer's complains.
Well, Joe had to do it, Marshal. We just can't go on without something to eat. Look where I've been hoeing over there. I couldn't plant enough for hardly anything to come up. We can't afford no more seed up. Our credits run out in Dodge.
Well, that ground doesn't even look like it's been plowed.
I've done the best I could. It ain't easy.
No, ma'am. Not for a woman. We're on our way over to Ed Thorpe's. I guess you know that they got spotted fever.
I was there this morning. Ed Thorpe's dead. Died in the night, I guess.
You didn't tell me that, Joe.
You mean you left Miss Thorpe and the baby alone over there?
I ain't gonna chance catching no fever.
But sure... the baby.
My woman's always worrying about babies. It's only because she can't have none, I guess. She's like one of them there dry gourds.
Don't, Joe. You're putting shame on me.
Chester.
Yes, sir?
Let's get out of here. Oh, Miss Nader.
Yes, Marshal?
Next time you're in Dodge, come see me, huh? I'll get you some seed to plant.
That whistling man, Bobby Haggart, really started something. Tonight, the Calypso Boys join in. Ready, amigos?
Packs more pleasure, packs more pleasure. Chesterfield packs more pleasure because Chesterfield's more perfectly packed.
It stands to reason a cigarette made better and packed better smokes better, tastes better. And Chesterfield is more perfectly packed by Accuray. This electronic miracle removes human error in cigarette manufacture. So Accuray Chesterfield is firm and pleasing to the lips. Mild, yet deeply satisfying. Yes, Chesterfield gives you something no other cigarette can give you.
Chesterfield packs more pleasure because Chesterfield's more perfectly packed.
To the touch, to the taste, Chesterfield packs more pleasure because it's more perfectly packed. By Chesterfield, mild, yet they satisfy the most.
Mr. Dillon, I thought we wouldn't never make Dodge tonight.
How's the baby, Chester?
Well, it's asleep anyway. Guess I've been holding it right, huh?
Just like a mother.
Oh, I am not.
Oh, there's Doc waiting for us. Father! You just sit tight a minute, Chester. We'll help you with the baby.
I hope it don't wake up or anything.
Matt, where are Ed Thorpe and his wife?
Well, Ed died before we got there, Doc. Miss Thorpe's lying down in the wagon back there. We covered her up good. She's been asleep most of the way.
Oh, yeah. Mrs. Thorpe? She's still asleep. Give me a hand up, Matt.
Yeah.
Oh, Mrs. Thorpe? Oh. Oh, my.
What's the matter, Doc?
She's not asleep, Matt. She's dead.
No.
Died on the way in, I guess. Now we got a baby to take care of.
You know, Doc, I think she knew she was going to die.
Why?
Just before we left her place, she told me that if anything happened to her, the baby was to be put in Ma Smalley's care. And Ma Smalley was to have complete charge over him. Well, what she says goes.
Well, Ma's a widow. She's had kids herself. That was a good choice.
Yeah.
But she's too old to raise them herself, man.
Well, we'll worry about that later, Doc. Let's get busy. Hello, Ma.
Howdy.
How've you been, Miss Nadler?
Pretty good, Marshal. Marshal, Mrs. Nadler wants to adopt the Thorpe baby.
Oh? Well, Miss Thorpe left the baby in your charge, Ma. It's all up to you.
Well, I've had him over a week, Marshal, and I'm going to keep him a while longer so he'll be near Doc just in case. But Mrs. Nadler here seems like a mighty fine woman to me. And I'd let her take that baby, only I'm worried about one thing.
I told her, Marshal, and the truth, and she's afraid maybe Joe and I can't make a go of it out there. You remember what you said when you was leaving that day?
I said to come see me, I'd help you get some seed to plant.
Well, now, that's all I need. I get a little corn up there. I might even raise a few hogs. I'll work awful hard, Marshal. I promise I will.
She gets started. She can have the baby, Marshal.
Miss Nadler, why don't you come by my office before you leave town? I'm going to the store here and have a talk with Mr. Jonas now.
Oh, Marshal, I do thank you.
Come on back to the house, Mrs. Nadler.
All right.
You can look at him.
Oh, hello, Marshal.
Hello, Jonas.
Well, what can I sell you today?
I came by to see you about Ms. Nadler. You know her, don't you?
Yeah, of course I do. Joe Nadler's out back in the stock room right now.
Oh, he is?
Yeah. Hey, Nadler, come in here a minute. He's buying himself a new pair of boots, Marshal.
I thought their credit had run out.
Well, Nadler's doing better now. He started bringing meat into Delmonico's and a couple other eating places and paid up part of his bill already, ain't you, Nadler?
I don't know as I like you talking about my private affairs, Jonas.
Oh, no harm. It's only Marshal Dillon.
Come on, Nadler. Those are good-looking boots.
They ought to be. Them's the best I stock. Them's $20 boots.
$20? I'd buy a whole wagon load of seed, Nadler.
You telling me how to spend my money?
Does your wife know you've been doing better lately?
Family matters ain't no concern of the law.
Yours are. And if it wasn't for your wife, I wouldn't bother just warning you. But because of her, I'm telling you to take off those boots and buy some seed and whatever else you need to grow corn with.
Now, you look here,
you
Marshal.
Shut up! Now, I'm giving you a chance, Nadler. In 3 days from now, I'm riding out to see what you've done with it. It's up to you whether or not you'll be riding back with me.
Today's Thursday, Mr. Dillon. Ain't we riding out the Nadlers?
We can wait another day, Chester.
You know what? I don't think you want to go at all.
Yeah, you're right. I don't.
Hello, Marshal.
Bowers.
Chester.
Hello, Mr. Bowers.
I was just up at Delmonico's, Marshal, having myself a feed.
Oh, good. How was it?
It was fine, till I went out back and got a talking with the cook.
Oh?
Marshal, I reckon any man's got a right to complain when he goes to a restaurant and finds himself eating his own beef.
I know about that, Bowers.
You do? And why ain't you done nothing about it?
Oh, because of Ms. Nadler, I guess.
Look, Marshal, I'm a rich man. I don't mind a nester slaughtering one of my calves when he's starving. And nobody's going to start selling my beef. I'll kill him. He keeps that up.
All right, I'll handle it, Bowers.
I admire that woman, too, Marshal, but letting him get by with rustling ain't going to help her. By the way, Ma Smalley brought some pies down to the kitchen while I was there. She's waiting outside here. She wants to talk to you. Keep her right up.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Hello, Ma.
You riding out to Nadler's, Marshal?
I am.
Then you tell her I'm sorry. Tell her I think she's a good woman, but I can't let that baby go into the home of a cow thief.
Oh. And it'll break her heart, Ma.
Son, I got a trust put in me.
All right, I'll tell her.
Say, where are you listening to Gunsmoke? In your car? Getting ready for dinner? Oh, I see. Just relaxing in your favorite easy chair. Well, I'd say you're in a good spot right now to really enjoy a Chesterfield. You see, Chesterfield packs more pleasure because it's more perfectly packed. It stands to reason. A cigarette made better and packed better smokes better, tastes better. And Chesterfield is more perfectly packed by Accuray. This electronic miracle removes human error in cigarette manufacture. So Accuray Chesterfield is firm and pleasing to the lips, mild, yet deeply satisfying. Yes, Chesterfield gives you something no other cigarette can give you.
Chesterfield packs more pleasure because Chesterfield's more perfectly packed.
To the touch, to the taste. Chesterfield packs more pleasure because it's more perfectly packed. Buy Chesterfield. Mild. Yet they satisfy the most.
Hello, Ms. Nadler.
Oh, Marshal. Hello, Chester.
Hi, ma'am.
What brings you out here, Marshal?
Is your husband home?
No, he's been gone since morning.
Oh. Ms. Nadler, do you know that he's been slaughtering Emmett Bowers' beef?
Oh. Mr. Bowers complained about it. About that calf?
Well, it's more than that one calf, Ms. Nadler. He's been selling meat around Dodge lately.
So that's what he had in the wagon.
Now, I know you had nothing to do with it, Ms. Nadler, but... I hate to tell you this, but... Ma Smalley isn't going to let you have the baby.
Oh. Well, she's... She's right, Marshal. It wouldn't be fitting.
Mr. Dillon, look.
Huh?
Over yonder.
It's Emmett Bowers. I'll be back, Ms. Nadler. I'm going to go talk to him.
Them other two must be riders of his, huh?
Yeah.
I thought I might find you here, Marshal.
There's something wrong, Bowers?
One of my men's been murdered. We found him out yonder about 5 miles. He'd been left for dead, but he talked a little.
Well, what happened?
He's gone now, Marshal, so you'll have to take our word for what he told us.
All right.
You run across Joe Nadler, slaughtering another steer.
Nadler shot him?
That's right.
Anything else?
Only that Nadler got on his horse and headed for Dodge. I guess he figures he'll get caught and he might as well get drunk one more time.
He'll get caught. I promise you that, Bowers.
Finally found him, Mr. Dillon. He's in there getting drunk at the bar.
Now, that's taken us long enough. Everybody in town must know I'm after him by now.
There, see him?
Yeah, I see him.
Stop there, Marshal. Don't you come no closer.
Put that gun away, Nadler.
I saw Chester. I knew you'd be in here next.
Why, Nadler?
You don't fool me. You know all about it.
You admit killing that rider?
I knew when I shot him I couldn't get by with it. My horse's tracks was all over the place.
Well, don't make it any worse than it is.
I told you not to come no closer.
Put your gun on the bar, Nadler.
You watch what I'm going to do with it.
No, Nadler, don't.
Why not? Hit you, didn't I? Now I'm going to kill you.
You hurt bad, Mr. Dillon?
He hit me in the arm, Chester, but I'll be all right.
You killed him?
Yeah. Do something with him, will you? I'm going over to Doc's.
Yes, sir, I will. Alvin.
Marshal Dillon?
Huh? Oh, Ma Smalley.
Why, you've been hurt.
Oh, it's not bad, Ma.
What about Joe Nadler?
He's dead.
I figured he would be. I heard you was looking for him. That's why I followed you down here.
Look, my arm's bleeding some, Ma. I better get over to Doc's.
Well, you hear me out first, Marshal.
Yeah, of course, Ma. Go ahead.
You'll be the one to tell Mrs. Nadler about him, won't you?
I guess so.
Take a wagon with you, Marshal.
What?
A woman can't live out there alone. Now, I got an extra room at my house if she'll help with the work.
Well, what about the baby?
It'll be her baby, Marshal. And tell her I won't interfere none neither.
Yeah, I sure will, Ma. I'll tell her all that. I'll go out first thing in the morning.
Well, you won't go nowhere. You just stand here gabbing all night. That arm's bleeding, Marshal. You ought to go get it fixed, you hear?
Yeah, you're right, Ma. But then you pretty off on a hire.
In a moment, our star, William Conrad.
Chesterfield packs more pleasure because Chesterfield's more perfectly packed.
A cigarette made better and packed better smokes better, tastes better. And Chesterfield is more perfectly packed by Accuray. This electronic miracle removes human error in cigarette manufacture. So Accuray Chesterfield is firm and pleasing to the lips. Chesterfield, mild, yet they satisfy the most.
You know, the buffalo hunters killed off the entire High Plains herd in a few short years, leaving the Indians to starve. And next week, this hunger sets off an Indian massacre. And that was the West. Good night.
Gunsmoke, produced and directed by Norman McDonald, stars William Conrad as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal. Our story was specially written for Gunsmoke by John Meston, with music composed and conducted by Rex Corey. Sound patterns by Tom Hanley and Bill James. Featured in the cast were Vic Perrin, John Daner, Jeanette Nolan, Virginia Christine, and Frank Cady. Harley Bear is Chester, Howard McNair is Doc, and Georgia Ellis is Kitty. Help today and hope tomorrow is the slogan of the 7th annual United Cerebral Palsy Drive. Support United Cerebral Palsy. Live modern. Smoke L&M.
Live modern. Change to L&M.
Only with L&M can you enjoy the full, exciting flavor of today's finest tobaccos through the modern miracle of the pure white miracle tip. So light up. Free up. Let your taste come alive. Live modern. Smoke L&M.
Live modern. Change to L&M.
Join us again next week for another specially transcribed story on Gunsmoke.